Hi and welcome to a new year of Walleye Chronicles, where we get you guys in here and talk about fishing. It doesn't have to be all walleye fishing. It could be any kind of fishing. So we bring in here, we talk about how you start out fishing and how you've grown your love for fishing. On the first episode of the new year, I have a wonderful gentleman with me. We all know him. I think he might be the most known person in the walleye world. He has more phone numbers and more of us guys have his phone number than anybody else. I'd like to welcome from AIM, Mr. Denny Fox. How you doing, Denny?
Pretty good, Matt. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem. It's interesting. So I did a couple quick calculations, and I figured out that 732 people put your number in their phone last year.
That's pretty close to, well, I don't know if they all put it in my phone, but I bet you it was pretty close.
Right? I mean, and what I can tell is you, I believe you do 21 walleye tournaments a year, 20 with AIM, and then one, you run the Fremont one, correct?
No, actually, I do 20 regular season events in four different divisions. Then we run our one national championship. And then I run two more, one for the Grand Rapids Area Hockey Association, and also one for Warrior Boats up on Lake of the Woods.
You don't do anything with the Fort Fremont one anymore?
No, I turned that over. You know, in my past, I sold boats for them for 20 years.
Okay.
And I started that tournament back in 2000 and ran it till through 2014. But when I left there, I turned it over to the new guys and let them take it from there.
Awesome. Well, let's get started. Where'd you grow up?
Saginaw, Michigan. Just outside of Saginaw, actually. I grew up in a little place called Freeland. And Freeland is right in the middle of Bay City, Saginaw, and Midland, on the shores of the Tittabawassee River, where millions of Saginaw Bay walleyes run up to spawn. Literally a stone's throw from the house I grew up in.
So that must have been easy to shape your childhood.
Well, there was really no walleyes one per se when there's a lot of chemicals upstream being dumped in, and there was no walleyes in Saginaw Bay until they started building rearing ponds around Saginaw Bay and they started dumping them into the bay. Guys like O.J. Seferling was leading that out with the Saginaw Bay Walleye Club. All of a sudden around 1980, walleye showed up. And a lot of them. And the spawn was good, and it took off, and we started fishing them pretty heavy.
So what was the first, do you remember your first time fishing? What was the first time out was like for you, if it was bass or perch or whatever it was?
That would have been at my grandmother's cabin on the shores of Secord Lake in Gladwin, Michigan. And I was probably two or three in the pictures that I've seen holding up bluegills. The family would go up there. We owned a big chunk of turf up there, and we would all go up there on the weekends and catch bluegills. So, but it wasn't too long that Ray Scott started something called BASS, and that black stripe down the side of that fish drew me right in. And there was a lot of bass in this lake because we would catch them. So when I was probably around 12, I started doing a lot of bass fishing, rowing out in the boat, going down the canal, pitching underneath docks, and learned a lot about fishing at that point. Learned a lot about things in general, like not falling out of the boat. And, you know, we didn't have trolling motors. They wouldn't allow us to use their outboard motors, that meaning our fathers.
Yep.
So all we had was a 12-foot rowboat to go out in.
Caught a lot of fish out there, I bet, though.
Caught tons. It didn't take long, though. I spied a fish, you know, back in the 80s, a 79-80 with a white tip on its tail. And that just totally outweighed that black stripe altogether at that point. I still have my original BASS decal they used to send you.
Oh, nice.
I wish I had the letter from Ray Scott that he would send with it when you joined bass, because obviously there's a lot of people that would enjoy seeing that these days.
Right. So that early, you had obviously had friends and stuff that we would go out with, or was your, you guys have a pack of guys that just kind of went all the time and after school, and how'd that work?
Yeah, the fish, well, we did a lot of sports. So, you know, and through high school years, I graduated in 82. So in the early years there, we were always you know, wrestling practice, football practice, baseball practice. We're always doing something, but in the summer times, that's when we would get a chance to fish a little bit more. It wasn't until I left high school that I started getting into groups of guys that I'd fish with. Then we became a little bit more, you know, we had jobs, we had boats. The Saginaw River was absolutely on fire. Heck, I even started a shanty rental business on the Saginaw River with my cousin. We called it the 10-pound shanty rental because you could catch a 10-pounder out of our shanty. What,
how many shanties did you have?
We had 10 at one point. Saginaw River's a dicey place, so you lose some.
What were they made out of?
Oh, we were pretty cheap about it. We actually made portable. So back then, you didn't have these flip overs. You didn't have all this stuff. Back then, we had two pieces of wood on the end, and visqueen over the top. You'd fold them down, hook them up, and drag them up the bank.
Oh, what are you charging for those today?
Oh, if I remember right, it was $50 a day, and you could put three guys in them.
Oh, that's a mess.
We would open up the holes and light the heaters and meet them all at my buddy's bait shop in Saginaw, and they would follow us, and we'd start dropping them off at their shanties, and when they were done, they would call us and from the bait shop, because there was no cell phones back then.
Oh, that's pretty fun. How old were you then?
Oh, I must have been 22, 23. It was 86, 87, and that stretch there.
Oh.
There was a lot going on back then.
But you suppose you used all that money for bait and stuff too, probably, huh?
Well, I happened to have a 20-foot boat at the time, so most of it went right back into the throat of that. And in Michigan, it wasn't, you know, yet again, some of our younger viewers don't remember these. They literally think we've had these big tiller boats big windshield boats, the good fishing equipment that we've got today. Back then, it wasn't that way. I had a 20-foot Thunderbird boat with a 120 IO in it. That was our bay walleye boat. It was big, and it could handle the waves out on Saginaw Bay, and I had four downriggers and a Willie mast on it. They were running big boards out there. And
How much did that thing run you back?
I can't even remember. It honestly was already 20 years old when I had it. So it probably cost me, you know, a week's pay or something today.
What was your first thing that you remember buying for fishing? Like a pole or electronics? What was the first thing you might have bought that you're proud of saving up?
You know, that's really interesting, because the thing that I always wanted was a depth finder, a portable depth finder that I could put on any boat that I was in. So what I bought was Ego Magna 2.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
How do we remember this stuff? Mm-hmm. That was forever ago.
Yeah, my dad had the same one.
On the portable box, two batteries inside, suction cup on the bottom, and you could... You could take that to any of your buddies' boats, and they'd be jealous.
Yep.
Because you had a depth finder, and they didn't.
That's crazy.
Little fish pictures would come across the screen. It was the first LCD units, you know, we had. It was sure better than nothing.
That's true. You know, as a kid growing up, my dad had one. I don't know if he had the two, but he had a magnet something. And I remember just watching the screen. It may or not catch fish, may not be in the fish. I don't know if the fish were actually not really understand. Worked, but at least I could watch the screen and go, okay, well, at least there's fish. I can't catch. Well, struggling as a kid trying to catch things, but it was nice to see that, give you hope almost.
You know, we started to learn real quick that I think it was always in simulator mode, because a fish would just come across from every now and then, just keep you interested in staring at that screen. But biggest thing is you had the depth. We found weed lines. We started to understand fish, and that was just about the time the PWT was kicking off. The MWC was coming into play. You had more articles. I mean, you want to dream back. One of my heroes, and I mean, now he's a friend, but Keith Cavias, he wrote an article. So what article did he write? Was chasing your line for more river walleyes. It had to be 86, 7, somewhere near. So I went out. He's talking about a bow mount trolling motor. I'm fishing out of a 14-foot boat with a 6-horse Evinrude on the back end of it at the time. I go out and I find an electric trolling motor for sale at Ted Williams. Start laughing. I write out of Montgomery Ward's account for $40, man. So I start using that thing, and we just start whacking the Saginaw River walleyes. Wow. Next year, I went out and bought a bigger boat. A bow mount on it almost threw me in the drink a few times trying to learn how to use that.
Yeah, it's interesting that era, how things kind of, you know, now we're in the social media area, but really as publications was right around the late 80s and stuff, in Fisherman and all those other magazines really started. I mean, maybe that I didn't have access to before that, but it really first something I noticed that, you know, I had to have the Walleye Insider to read all it. Even recently, Bass Pro Shops still sends out their catalogs. I got one of those the other day, and I'm like, oh, man, it's been a long time since I've just paged through one, right? I mean, this idea of paging through a catalog and thinking of all the things you want to put on your boat or have on your pole is.
Well, I think that goes back to, you know, their original way of doing business. It was to get the guys dreaming, to get you doing something other than nothing regarding the products they were selling. And I think they've learned that, yes, electronic is great, and you can sit any place, is a great way to put it, and read about all this stuff. But seeing that picture, seeing that picture makes a big difference. And I mean, I attribute a lot to the early ages and the dawn of tournament walleye fishing in the late 80s with the MWC and the PWT coming on in 1989, and them actually making heroes out of anglers. You know, and all of a sudden there was guys that we had no clue in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We're sitting over in Michigan, and, you know, where they all came from. It's really quite the development over the years.
It really is, especially, you know, I grew up in Berlin, just outside of Oshkosh. So, you know, the paper would be full of the walleye anglers, Oshkosh Northwest, and used to put the anglers in there, and Gary Gray and all the guys that were from the area, and following those guys, then seeing, you know, the In Fisherman once a month, turn to the back page and see how everybody did in that weekly tournament. You know, my child, it was awesome. Follow up on people, and then, you know, now as I get older and fish tournaments and meet some of these guys, you know, they're all actually pretty decent dudes. It was good because childhood was all about, I want to be this guy, meet this
guy. I want to be him.
Right?
Exactly. You know, and they did a great job of marketing back then. Mm-hmm. Yes, now think about it. You just got a catalog in the mail. It's paper. Oh, yeah. And you can look at it and you open it up and who's in there? Who did you see from the walleye world that's in there? Oh, see, you know, back then you'd see them at the tournaments. Mm-hmm. You'd get the PWT magazine. Man, you couldn't wait till that thing came out after, so you could read about everything and see their pictures and actually dream, man, I want that to be me.
See those boats.
Everything. Retailers of every product out there, that's what they want. And then that's what they want you as anglers to do. And I think it's fantastic. I think it's exactly what needs to happen.
I grew up my majority of my life till I was in my late 20s. All I wanted was a Pro V Lund walleye. That's all I ever wanted. Give me a red Pro V Lund walleye boat. It's pretty much, you know, obviously, you know, aluminum and first fiberglass. That's all I grew up with. I closed my eyes. That's all I could think of as, you know, a walleye boat or Lund boat sitting there casting walleyes. Crazy. The imprint on you.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's a great feeling. And they build that into you. And it's just, I think that's what drives us to do what we do in the walleye world.
Right.
I know it drives me.
Sure. So moving on, you got into some tournament fishing as well.
Oh yeah. I started tournament fishing back in 1986. On some of the small tournaments on the Saginaw River, and the Saginaw Bay Walleye Club was just getting started. There was no Michigan Walleye Tour yet, so everything was in its infancies. And then enough with Michigan. Michigan's economy goes up and down drastically with the car industry.
Yep.
I was a meat cutter at the time. Me and my future wife were sitting there on our porch, and things were getting worse, and we just picked up one day and left and went to Wisconsin.
Oh, do you have any family here, or just on a whim? Oh, wow.
We had a had a friend of mine who moved from Minnesota to Michigan. We hung out together for a few years over there. And then he moved over here and he says, dude, you got to check this out. It's a great place. I says, yeah, we're sick of it here. We just packed up our stuff. I quit my job and left.
So where'd you end up?
Appleton, Wisconsin.
There you go.
So we got up in Appleton and I found a meat cutting job right off the bat and the world was good. And we had a little problem with the disc in my neck because meat cutting is not the easiest thing in the world. And I damaged the disc and there was no more too much nerve damage down my right arm to be able to work a knife all day long. So there I was sitting 1993 going, what am I going to do? Early 94 rolls around and I start selling boats at Fort Fremont Marine. And I just decided to stay there for 20 years. Nice. What a great job. You go to work in sandals and
shoes. So what made you do that? Was it like something you wanted to do or you just started looking in the back of the newspaper and found a classified and would look for a job?
Well, after I lost my trade, basically right out of high school, I had to try to find another one, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went to employment service, Western Services, and we talked about what I wanted. The guy was real cool, and he started sending me to different places. He sent me to some factories. He sent me to some outside work, and finally he says, "Hey, I think I got the job for you. You say you're an outdoorsman, and they're looking for a parts manager service writer at Fort Fremont up on the Wolf River." I walk in and they said, "What do you know about motors?" "Ah, you pull the string and you go fishing." They says, "Can you fix one?" I says, "No, but I can make it run to get to shore." "Ah, close enough. We'll take you." So I learned everything about motors, Mercury motors, Mercury outboards, Yamahas. We sold them. So Warrior boats and Tuffies and pontoons. And what we were really known for, though, was inboard ski boats. Okay. Or boats that go over 100 miles an hour. Right. Hydra streams.
And you found yourself up on the banks of one of the great walleye runs.
And that was really the inspiring move when we got here to Wisconsin. First trip I made was up here to Fremont, and I met guys down at Pooh Falls Landing, which is now Chico's, and okay. Larry Martaco at Larry and Jan's, and Moz Bait and Tackle. It was a good trip. I learned a lot. And then I found out from you guys here in Wisconsin how little I knew about walleye fishing and how undiverse I was. I could troll a crankbait and I could drift a river. But I couldn't figure out this anchoring thing on the Wolf River. What in the world are they doing? Well, right. It took a few years, but we got her figured out now.
Is there anything that you brought from your early days in Michigan that you used right away when you came here that worked, that was successful for you?
Anything that they weren't doing here? No. But one thing that I did learn how to do on Saginaw Bay was troll. And so I guess in not a piece of equipment, just more a piece of knowledge on how to get baits in. And if you remember back in the 80s, I guess, there was big fish on the Winnebago system.
Yep.
But there was a couple very good years, and all the marshes were filled up with garbage. Now, for our listeners that don't know, in Wisconsin, the fish don't spawn on gravel or sand. They spawn on canary grass and marshes up the Wolf River predominantly, but they go to your hometown of Berlin as well. Yep. And, what, you know, you forget what you're talking about sometimes. So they had some pretty good spawns, yep. And they were protecting the fish here, and they put a size limit on them. But when they did, Winnebago filled up with walleyes, and the guys didn't know. Their Parsons and Cavias were just coming out with they were working with Willie at the time, and they were bringing out crank and bait line. There was no such thing as line counter reels. Nope. You used a level line with line that was black marked every 10 feet so you could count it out. They were working with, what were them boards they were working on? The first boards that they were working on before offshore boards, before they started working with them. But I was running big boards, and I understood how to count out where you don't just let a crank. Cast a crankbait out and say that's good enough. I learned how to sweep the lines and count them out so I could tell where the baits were at on Saginaw Bay. And that's what I brought to friends' boats and even my boat on Winnebago. So we started catching a lot of walleye out there real fast.
So then did you got into tournaments when you're there? How did tournaments go?
You know, tournaments over there were okay. Because yet again, I was pretty new to it. And there was some salty old dogs on the Saginaw and Tittabawassee River. They wouldn't say a word about how they were catching fish. And everything was different. We were learning. Believe it or not, I didn't even know I learned it, but I learned how to drag jigs over there from a girlfriend who didn't want to move her rod around, so she's just holding it. I said, you got to do so, and she caught all the fish. So I didn't even know I learned how to drag jigs until we learned how to drag jigs here. I said, I guess she was right.
Right.
so we it was the early informative years were pretty hard, but when I got over here, I started tournament fishing again in 1996. And me and a close friend that I worked with, he was in sales at the time, we started fishing together in the WWA with Steve Pohl. And that's when we started escalating. We won some tournaments. We were nearly team of the year a few times in a row. Steve went out, started fishing the MWS. I fished the FLW League, won an event out of Winneconne in 2006. For those of you that don't know, the Walleye League, the FLW Walleye League, was a pro-am style tournament, but it was only $150 for the pro to get in.
But
you had to have your boat and everything else. It was a great starter platform for the PWT and the FLW back then. And as we progressed, we just got better and better.
Do you remember what your payout for that tournament was?
I do. I still got the
sheet. So I looked back, and as I'm scrubbing the internet looking for everything about Denny Fox, if you go on Walleye Central, there's still an article up of when you won. You won a whopping
$3,045. $3,045. Yeah, I think we had, we were short 7 boats on that one. We had 93 boats.
Do you remember what you did that day?
Can't say. Don't want to say. Let's just say it was cell phone time, so you had a lot of cell phone calls then.
Okay.
And there was a lot of texts coming in, but when we got back to Wyawega and went, well, we may or may not have had a Fresca or two.
Hey, listeners, let's talk outdoor streaming. What is the best outdoor streaming platform out there? Well, it's simple. It's Fix TV. Not only do they have this great program, but they have all kinds of hunting and fishing shows along with some weaponry shows. So when you get bored and need something to do, get your fix with Fix TV. And when you're done with that and you have that fix to get out in the outdoors, jump on therealshot.com and get everything you need to satisfy your fix. So you were in the tournament world, and then at some point you decided you got out of it and started doing directing.
Well,
or is there, where did that change happen?
It's actually a pretty good story. So, as time goes along and I wanted to fish the PW. Okay. That was my total dream. The guy I went to high school with was fishing it. Other friends of ours from Michigan were fishing it. They were doing well. I was pre-fishing with them. It's like, I can fish with you. I can fish with them. They're winning. I can win. I'm getting ready to go. I am selling enough boats. I can afford to do it now. I got a 20-foot boat with a 250 on it. All right, we're good.
Ready to go.
I can go. And that year, the PWT shut down.
Oh.
So I stayed around and I kept piddling around, but I didn't want to fish the FLW. AIM wasn't out and about. And then we had a recession. And the boats quit selling. And of course, when you're a salesman that works on commission, you just pull your reins back. You know, you weather the storm, but you just had to. I had been running my own tournament then in 2014 for 15 years. That was the 15th year I had run it. And when AIM came out in 2008, I watched them and I watched their catch, record, and release. And I went to the tournaments and I seen what they were doing on stage. And I thought to myself at that point, here's the future of all fishing. I was so sick and tired of hearing about people at tournaments that were complaining or boisterously yelling at us for killing fish for sport. And even though at the time my biggest comeback was, yes, but I can take my five fish a day just like you, it still wasn't the right
thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2013, AIM made a point to make a post online that said, we are going to expand to a team circuit in 2014.
Yeah, because originally it was Pro-Co, wasn't it?
Pro-Co tournament, a Pro-Am tournament, and that started in 2009, ran for two or three years until, there was only so many pros left after that recession, and they could only feed one engine, and the FLW engine was pretty thick. Yep. So they stayed, AIM stayed in the game by doing one tournament a year called Pro-Co. So you and I would be the pro, Matt, and then we would invite one of our friends to join, but he would get drawn with three different pros in 3 days.
Okay.
So you and I would be the pros in the boat, and then we would have a different co each day. And they stayed alive by doing that. They kept their sponsors and everything else, but 13, they decided the catch, record, release is the future, but we have to get it out to the people. People don't know what it can do. So they decided to start the weekend series. Now, at that time, I'd already been in the outboard industry for 20 years. You never been someplace for 20 years? It was time to maybe jiggle that tree and do something different. So I called up Tommy Kimos and says, I want to run that thing in Michigan or in Wisconsin, excuse me. And he's like, all right, well, send me a resume. So lo and behold, they hired me. And I started running the Wisconsin tournaments in 2014. And at the end of the season, they asked me if I wanted a full-time job. And I quit my job at 20 years, and here I am today.
Wow. You know, it's funny you look back and you scrub the internet, and there's so much things that came around when they first started, they restarted that on 2014. Just everywhere I look, there's the same news release out to everywhere. It was like flooded to the whole world. What was coming? So did you think this? Obviously we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. But did you think starting that this is kind of where it would end up down the road, or do you think it would? Did you think it would go faster or slower? Or how do you think the burn rate?
Well, I knew that catch, record, release was going to catch on. I just knew it. You know, I had my fingers into it enough to know what it was all about and how it would be treated. And of course, some of the guys are skeptical, and with technology, they thought they could do this and that. When they found out they couldn't, we got a lot of stop gaps in place on that. We'll get into some more of that after a while. The burn rate started the first year. So the very first tournament we had was in Winneconne, and we had 85 guys in Winneconne. And the next two tournaments, we had 100 in. And they only had three tournaments and a championship that year, and we had 285 entries out of 300.
Oh.
And that started the burn.
So why do you think? Is it because it's the catch and pitch and release, or is it because it's the weekend? You know, you can still be a normal guy with a full time job and still compete in a series.
Well, I would like to believe that I'm smart and good looking and everybody wants to follow me, but I'm gonna in Wisconsin here. I'm gonna give you the straight poop. And that is, we had a wonderful series called the Midwest Walleye Series for a lot of years here by a good friend of ours, Jim Kuhn, who ran that. And Jim had passed. And his wife and his associates were not going to restart the circuit in 2014. It was kind of a perfect storm for AIM stepping in and filling this void for the anglers at the time. So because Jim was such a great guy, I do not want to take all the thunder that we're so great or anything. It was a setup between both of us, kind of. But in reality, I think Jim would have been out anyways, whether he got sick. And I think CRR was going to take over. Today, we're so conservation-minded out here. And it all led to AIM.
Right.
It all leads back to AIM.
Right. So it's been 10 years. Really?
Yep, we got 10 seasons in. This is going to be our 11th.
Are you surprised there's tournaments out there that still do live weight?
Well, I can tell you this by watching the world and watching the different tournament circuits who still keep fish struggle with all the regulations that are on fishing and the differences between the states and the things that I need to be aware of at any mm-hmm. given time. I always have to be on top of my game. I have to know what's happening out there, and they have to deal with so much more, yeah. man, because you can't do this here and you can't do that there. But you can do this over there and not over here. And where are we going to have the tournament if we can't do this? And they're struggling with knowing all them rules anymore. And I'm just glad we don't right. have yeah, to do
that.
That's
a full-time job. Plus, you know, I know I won't name names, but there's a lot of tournaments that's still out there. And, you know, they're trying their best to keep fish alive. And it just, at some point, you know, you can't, it's tough to put a fish in a live well and bang it around for 8 hours. And yeah, they may swim away once they're released, but they ain't going to make it long term.
Well, barotrauma is a yep. real thing, and we all know it. And it's something that I think every tournament angler has to be cognitive of, even on the aim circuit, of how deep you're catching the fish, mm-hmm. how long you're keeping them out of the water. You need to process them fish, get them back in the water. But today's anglers are so conservation minded, man. Mm-hmm. And I applaud them. If you take anglers by age groups, let's start at 90. The 90 to 80 group, they're going to keep every fish they catch. You know why? Because that's how they grew right. up. And there's right. nothing against
yeah.
And there's less of them from 80 to 70 and 70 to 60, yeah. which you hit about me about then, and 60 to 50s. Yeah, we're going to keep a few, but, you know we can run down to the river, grab a few fish yeah. for supper if we want to now. You know, you don't have to go fill up coolers and coolers mm-hmm. and stack these fish up in your freezer because you're not going to eat them anyways.
Yeah.
And by the time they get down around your age, Matt, you guys don't keep.
Not very often, no.
So the CRR, catch, record, and release, in the walleye world anyways, it's not the anglers today accept it because they don't want to kill the fish. They want them to grow so they can catch bigger right. ones.
Yeah. Yeah, we get into our as my age and younger, more about the trophy and the picture and putting it on social media and all that kind of fun stuff than they are eating them, I think, sometimes. Although, I think, you know, the funny part is the catch and cook videos are so popular now because it's just weird that not a lot of people eat fish. I mean, I know quite a few guys eat fish, but like when I was a kid, fish was 3-4 times a week. That was pretty much a stable diet. And maybe I'm worn out from all those years eating fish, but you know, now for me, it's, you know, like you said earlier, if we're looking for fish, we'll, you know, keep one day and all the rest get kind of tossed back in.
Well, it's interesting too, because we have access to all these recipes online and great cooks that are showing us how to sous vide them and how many people poach fish. I really just fell in love with poaching fish now because deep frying is always a hard work. Yeah. It takes a lot to them. A baked walleye, it's fantastic yeah. and so much easier to eat. And everything I just mentioned is always better fresh than it is frozen.
Right.
That's so true. When I want fish, we go down and grab some. Yep.
So being that you run, you're busy. You're really busy.
Really
busy. How much time do you still get to fish?
Not much.
No.
It behooves me when we have a winter like this. Unfortunately, ice fishing's my chocolate because I've got time to yep. ice fish. I could actually do this from an ice shanty, whereas I can't do my job from, let's say, April 1st till the 1st of October from a boat very well. I'm gone every weekend. We're doing something. We're working hard. But when we have a fall like this, the Fox River in De Pere opens mm-hmm. up early. You can get it down there, whack some fish, get your jig on. The Wolf opens up, might be able to tag a few in there. Do some anchoring, but then the season starts and it's just mayhem.
What is your go-to tactic
in the yeah. river?
Just if you had this, if I said, hey, we're going, you got a day off today, we're going fishing, what do you want to do? What would be your technique you want to do?
Well, I guess it would depend on what time of the year, but let's say we're in the spring and it's the uprun, the fish mm-hmm. are coming up the river. I love anchoring. I would anchor every day over drift jigging for them things. I love to figure out their plan on how they're going to swim up that river. Okay. And when they take off and they get up that river, it's like kind of like NASCAR. They can't swim in the heaviest current, but they want to be right next to it. And you got to figure out where to put your boat along that line. Now, remember, they can't get out of the water and walk around you. So you got to figure out where to put that boat right in their way to be able to get them. And, oh, side scan on my Garmin unit sure do help that out a lot.
Did you ever think that you, with the electronics, when you bought that first Magnum, what they'd be now?
No. Today's electronics are just phenomenal. They still don't make the fish, but
no, not yet.
Let's not get out over our ski tips here. They still don't put more fish in the boat. However, they can put you over the fish a little bit easier.
A little quicker, too, it seems like.
Yeah. It dampens the time spent out there to learn.
But also, it seems to keep me there longer. If the weather's bad, but I know they're there, I'll stick around a little longer than normal. I think in the past, if I would get miserable, you know, there's really nothing to look and say, hey, there's fish there, I'd be like, I'm out of here. But now if I get miserable, I look down, I'm like, oh, they're still here. They're still here. I should be here.
They keep you around longer. Well, it keeps your interest a lot longer if you know the fish are there.
Attention span's better.
There you go.
So going into AIM, what were the first couple problems or first problems you guys had? Did you have problems the first couple years kind of getting going and doing the whole catch record release? Sorry.
Technology was not our friend right off the bat. We had great guys on the board of directors that were taking care of things. And one in particular, Jim Carroll, and I sat for hours on the phone. In fact, his wife calls me 4-hour Denny. And we would sit on the phone that long and we were building our back end. How are we going to take care of these guys? How are we going to get the weights into an Excel spreadsheet? How are we going to build that Excel spreadsheet so it's rapid? Because we're going to have 100 boats. We got a lot of weights to put into an Excel spreadsheet, figure out who won to be able to look at pictures. In our first year or two, we changed that up every single tournament. I think it was a work in progress that wasn't 2.0 next year. It was 2.0 next week. Because we had our Minnesota division that was doing the exact same thing over there as we are here. They had just as many boats. It was accepted. They walked away from other circuits and they came to fish with us. So it was good because we had both of them and we were breaking stuff so we could fix it and get to the point where we're at.
Getting there faster with two groups.
Yeah. You know, and we could only take one problem at a time. And the next problem that we had was taking entries. Entries was tough. Today it seems easy because you can just purchase the software. But in 2019, it wasn't there. So we built our own. We actually hired a guy, and I told him how I wanted our back end to be able to take the entries for you guys, buy your memberships, be able to be self sustaining, I guess, is a great way to do it without me having to hold your hand. We got like 1,000 guys that fish with us. And my phone can ring and ring and ring and ring and ring. And it did. It did. I got like 8,000 phone numbers in my phone. It's crazy.
So obviously people came over right away and wanted to fish. Was there any pushback of people that were fishing still saying, hey, we shouldn't do this. Why can't we just go to this? Was there ever a point in the first couple of years people like, hey, you're established now. Let's go back to taking live fish. Was there anybody that was out there chirping like that to you guys, or were you pretty much good to go?
That's interesting you should say that, because we just had a discussion just the other day with some guys on that. And they says, you know, once you do catch, record, and release, there's no going back. You don't ever want to keep them fishing your live well anymore. You don't want to babysit them. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have a bump tank guy says, she's rolling over too much. I'm going to have to make that a dead one. You know, having that ability for a bump tank guy to let you win or lose, nobody wanted that again, especially at this level.
Yeah, keeping fish at alive. That's very stressful for an angler. If you know this, you're having a problem with the fish, and somebody in the boats their whole day is just going to be babysitting that fish, and eventually it's going to die, and your job is to keep it alive for a couple of wiggles at the station.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and you got good at it too, didn't you? Boy, I had gallon jugs frozen in my cooler. You take the cover off of them and put them in your live well, let it recirculate, keep that ice cold in there. Oh, yeah, I could fizz fish. I could burp them out. I made sure my catch stayed alive. Yeah.
My tank is stained blue, I mean, from the G-juice, oh, right?
Yeah.
That's right. They should put a little blue hint in that when they make them.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a time and a place, but I think the future of all walleye fish. You think back on this for a minute, Matt. In 2008, when AIM Release got together and they released Catch, Record, and Release, there wasn't one tournament, bass or otherwise, that was doing that. Now look at how many are doing it in a variation of some sorts. AIM led the way, man. Sure. We brought it to the masses.
For sure. Is there...
Even in 14.
Right? Yeah. So... Is there, so as you guys kind of morph through what you were doing, I always wonder what happens in the trailer. It's, you know, the secret trailer that gets pulled up and the doors get closed. No one comes in and out of that thing. And we all stay on the outside stair waiting for that door to open up after, you know, an hour. How stressful is that knowing that, cause you guys generally do, you know, everything has to happen that night yet. Right. And if it's a bad weather day and you guys are sitting in the trailer and we're all kind of, you know, if it's, you know, ways away from people's homes. Is it stressful in that trailer of, hey, we got to get this done and get moving on? Or is it you guys just taking your time, or all is your everything just set in kind of stone of what you do and you just kind of plow along and get it done?
Well, you know, back in 2014 when we started, we didn't know when we were coming out of that trailer. we honestly didn't. we were still building the process and we hadn't broken enough to know what we needed to do yet. So over time, we became a process. So for all you guys out there that are wondering if Denny's just in there having cocktails while he's making you wait till 5 o'clock to go home, we're not.
We all assume it's done right away. You guys just having supper.
That's right. They think that we could do this. So let me tell you what I do. Here's how the process goes. We got 100 boats in a tournament, and if you're in the second flight, you're not due in until 3:15. Yep. So then you come in at 3:14 and you checked in and you're good. You're out there. So then you get in your boat and you look at all your pictures and you do everything else. And by 3:30, you've buttoned it up. And now there's people coming and going at the docks. And at 3:40-ish, you finally get on the dock and you bring me up your packet. You realize nothing's happened to that packet yet. Okay, you still got it. So you bring it to me and somewhere around 3:45, we get the packet. That's what our goal is every tournament. So the faster you guys can get them to us, the faster it is. We get into the trailer. Now we've got our own softwares now. We've got all this other stuff. And we have one person reading me the weights that the anglers claim to have. We put them all into our spreadsheets. We can organize it. They come to the top. And remember now, we've got the new pay scale started last year. So with 100 boats, we got 20 guys that are going to make money. Now, that means we've got to line up them 20 boats, starting with number one, take out their cards, take out their SD card, put it in the computer, make sure the fish are in order, like I keep saying every single time. Go down that card, make sure that you have the appropriate sizes, everything's right, add the scorecard up to make sure you scored it right, and then do that 20 times 2 minutes, unless there's a problem. And if you did a fish backwards or something else, then I've got to call you in. We got to discuss it, or we're going to show it to you after, usually after now, but we've got to find another packet because we're not going to announce anybody on stage when we're out there or post it that's in the money. And then have them have a bad fish.
Gotcha.
We just don't think that's good for
So anybody. You said you pull out the kind of get an idea of who's where everybody's at and you have the top 20. Do you guys go down below that just to make, you know, before you announce? So say there's 20, you pay to 20, you pick those 20 out. And then do you guys go down another 5-10 just to make sure there's nobody that's, or in case something happens? Or I guess it maybe doesn't make any sense. Does it make sense?
Well, I know what you're saying. So you're thinking, well, maybe some guy added his up.
Yeah. Do you go down a couple more extra in case that somebody drops out of that top 20?
It nobody's going to be dropped out of my top 20, but is there a possibility, and I think it did happen in one tournament where a guy did not add his card up correctly, and he made it into the last spot because he was that close to him, and he just had a error. And of course, everybody understands. It was just an error in adding, and we never penalize anybody for an error in adding. Okay. We just don't do that because that wouldn't be right. You know, it's cold out a lot of times. The numbers are little. You write down the wrong number. The big thing is you've measured your fish. You've done that part correctly, and you've got it on the board, and you picked out your five fish that you want to score. That is what we declare to be the most important part of your day. Gotcha.
So is there like a weird like army lights that come on, like green lights in there or red lights that come in there while you guys were in there?
Green lights,
like an army ship lights or something.
No, we just use we just have these battery powered lights, and mostly we crack the door a little bit, and
so everybody.
But we could get everything entered pretty quick.
Everybody has their own what to do though in there. It's a pretty renowned system.
Oh yeah, okay. Regimented. It has to be. There's no time for laughing and giggling or talking. I don't allow anybody to, and I don't let anybody in there to actually see our process, to be quite honest with you. If you notice something, we don't put out official results. Mm-hmm. We put out unofficial results, and there's a reason for that. When I get home then, I've got 100 packs, and I've got who I call my packet girl. My buddy's daughter was doing it for a while. We've got a new one this year, but she comes over and breaks down all them packets and gives me the scorecard and the chip.
Oh, okay.
Now, we've already looked at the top 20, but I look at every single other packet and every single fish from every single tournament angler in that tournament.
Okay.
I copy the thing. I've got a separate computer. I load the pictures into that file, so I keep them forever.
Whoa.
So I've got fish
pictures. Whoa.
You want fish pictures? I got
that. That is crazy.
So we keep them all. We reset everything. She puts the packets back together and gets them back in our bins for the next one. And then we release official. And some of you guys may know you were down in 50th place or something. I send you an email and you got a bad fish, dude. Sorry about it. Well, it didn't matter. I didn't make any money. However, for team of the year and for getting placements into the national championship, all the other stuff that you can do, you have to make sure that everybody's. And I've thrown out the last place guy with one fish that was 13 inches long because he wrote it down as 14. Mm. And he's like, well, it doesn't matter. I said, well, you, at least it didn't hurt this time.
Have you ever come across people that are trying to be nefarious of, peeling off a scale off a side or something like that and then taking the picture a few moments later? Is anything like that that happens, or is it pretty much, are you guys able to pretty much pick everything out?
We've got,
you don't have to tell me people.
We've got a way of processing pictures that them things are just picked right up. If you were damaging the fish that much to try to take a picture of it the second time, our cameras, our stuff would pick up on that, throw that out, say, you better start taking a look at this stuff. All of a sudden you got a tail that's all chewed up or something.
Cut down shorter.
Have we ever had it? Exactly, ever had it? I'm not going to say that it hasn't slipped through because that would be pretty stupid of me to say that. However, it wasn't in the money.
Okay.
It absolutely was not in the money.
Okay.
Could it have been farther down? Could they have tried something farther down? There's a possibility. However, I believe my anglers are stand upright guys. I believe every one of you guys that fish with us love to do it, and you're hoping that it's a fair playground for everybody. And a few of the bad ones that were on the edge of things, we have asked to leave and moved along from.
Okay.
So
that's good to know. I mean, it's one of those things where you just, people sit in the boat and you have a long day and you're wondering, and about whatever, but it just, everybody wants to make sure everything's on the up and up, right? And with the new technology or with the way things are done, it's always in the back of everybody's mind sometimes. Has there been any talk or anything about, you guys have thought about going to length, or is the weight conversion pretty much where you guys can stick with? And where did the weight, where did you guys come up with those conversions?
So right out of the gate, they took a Wisconsin report and a Minnesota report, because that's where they were going to start most of their tournaments as pros anyway. And they blended them together to come up with the conversion chart. Is it perfect? No, I've seen fish out in the Dakotas that were just piggies, but they were, man, it's like the back fat was coming right over their head. They're just huge. They wouldn't grow. They just got wide. And yes, they're going to weigh more. And I've seen skinny fish that are going to weigh less, but you got to remember a 27 inch fish is a 27 inch fish.
It's in real. It's relative to what everybody else catches.
That's right. Everybody's got on the same playing field. Now, would we ever go to an inch tournament? That's negative. Yeah. And here's why. Matt, if I can catch 15 inch fish all day long, you know, I'm going to run to them fish, mm-hmm. because I'm going to get five fish at 15 inches or 75 inches. But Matt, you know where to go catch big ones, and you're going to go catch a 28 and a 27 that are going to absolutely crush.
Oh, I got you.
In weight, my fish, but you aren't going to win. Mm. So it doesn't promote anybody to go catch big fish anymore, because your two big fish can't beat my five small. I got fish.
That makes sense. I didn't think about that far ahead. My other question was: have you guys ever thought about doing? You only get to card five fish instead of the whole, you can card, you know, keep carding your fish, adding up what you want. If it's way where you only can put five fish on the card, kind of like you would get to the kind of atmosphere, like you do, like say with live weight. I mean, the best thing about, to me, I don't like the fish that we have to keep them, but the live weight aspect is you only get to put five on your card. Is there anything of that you guys ever talked about doing, going down that road at all? I've had where you only can put five fish on a card.
Well, I think going back to the origins of AIM, it wasn't the intention of the, now we were started by 77 industry professionals. They're all household names. You would know every one of them. It's owned by them, but it's not particularly run by anyone. We're run by a 5-man board of directors, whom I answer to, and freedom. Freedom's a good word. Let's start with that. What this what AIM gets is freedom. Up on Green Bay, we have the freedom to go wherever we want. Now, there's other tournaments that have to abide by the southern boundary lines, the northern boundary lines, the northern group. We get our permit says, go wherever you want, Denny. Mm-hmm. And Michigan doesn't raise a stink over any of it. Trying to live underneath the rule of slot limits and only being able to box five fish. And that was all them problems that are out there in the world today. Party fishing. Mm-hmm. Remember party fishing last year in a tournament on Bago? Yep. All of them are gone because nobody, not one state, says if you catch a fish, that's one of your five fish that you can catch today, whether you throw it back or not. It all says whether you put that fish in your live well. As soon as it succumbs to your live well, it's part of your daily bag limit. So freedom is what AIM brings the anglers. I know. Some of you guys are out there, yeah, but then you put a boundary up on the Brown County line for the Fox River. Well, there's certain things that we're protecting too. You know, we got to protect you from you sometimes.
That's a fact.
And it's a fact. So freedom. It gives us the freedom to be able to use the whole system, use all the fish. And hey, listen, if you're good enough and you got two or three spots, you can go through. You don't have to worry about carding up that 21 incher and then wishing you didn't, because you can go up and get 28.
Wow, that's true. So wasn't gonna get other questions for you here. Do you feel that you have to distance yourself some from the anglers? A lot of these guys are your friends, but at the end of the day, you're the tournament director. Do you ever feel like, hey, I gotta, you know, keep so on at arm's length, or is it because of the way the CRR works, it doesn't really matter?
That's a darn good question, Matt. as much as I would love to be friends with and have frescas with them afterwards, and I do keep myself distanced, because even though some of the guys are friends of mine and I've known them way before being a tournament director, when the day comes that I have to make a phone call and tell you you have a problem with the fish or something, I don't want them to say, hey, listen, come on, man. I did this, or remember we known each other that, or I just think the position requires that. I think it just requires that you can be friends with them, you can laugh and joke, but as much as I'd love to get in some of you guys' boats and learn what you're doing, I just haven't done
it. What's your biggest pet peeve on tournament day? What's the one thing that bothers you the most of us anglers?
Tick-tock.
Time?
Tick-tock. If you're not on time, I'm frustrated. I am on time. Everything has its place. Get out of my way. Don't try to make me do something different. Everything has to be on time. And if you notice, we're always on
time. You're different time.
It's 7 o'clock and it's time to rock.
I have to admit that, unfortunately, I have been the last boat a couple times for Denny. And normally he's not waiting to hand anything out for me. Somebody else is waiting there and with my stuff. And I know that although I don't see you, I can see your disappointment as I roll up.
You can
feel it. With somebody else standing there holding my board and my stuff waiting for me.
Yeah, it's I say it in all the rules meetings and I joke about it, but I always like to try to remind everybody the faster we get our stuff, the better we can do our job. And every year there's somebody complaining they wish that we could get out mm-hmm. faster and do the awards quicker. But without having rules meetings now, by the way, we just had that survey go out. If you check your email.
Yeah, I saw that today. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, let's talk outdoor streaming. What is the best outdoor streaming platform out there? Well, it's simple. It's Fix TV. Not only do they have this great program, but they have all kinds of hunting and fishing shows, along with some weaponry shows. So when you get bored and need something to do, get your fix with Fix TV. And when you're done with that, and you have that fix to get out in the outdoors, jump on TheRealShot.com and get everything you need to satisfy your fix.
I'm thinking more guys are using the awards now as camaraderie. Yep. More of them started showing up now, and that's when you BS out in the parking lot. And, you know, now it's after the fact. Yep. So now you can actually tell somebody mm-hmm. what you did instead of standing there the night before grumbling because you can't say nothing.
Right, yeah.
You know, and you get that extra hour and 15 minutes. Yep, you can share stories, get to bond with each other, and then off you go. Because when I get off that stage, you guys are like a traffic jam getting out
right.
there.
And I don't mind. I guess I don't mind it because a lot of us, you know, there's a lot to do after a day of fishing to put stuff away on your boat. You know, if it's you're wiping your boat down, you're putting stuff down, getting ready for the next day's fishing. And, you know, that extra time kind of helps you, I think, wind down a little bit from the day of how it really went down.
I agree. After fishing so many tournaments, that would be actually a pleasure to not be in such a rush, take off and get out of there to get home and not have everything put away. Now you can really get it put away and be ready.
So what's your favorite moment from all these AIM series? Do you have one event or one thing that just sticks out in your head that you're just that it was a great time or a great finish or a great catch or weather and like that?
When I took the job to run this tournament circuit, I did it because I wanted the tournaments to run the way I always wanted tournaments to run. And I wanted the anglers to get the respect of winning a tournament like they should. My biggest thing is when I get to hand them first place plaques, guys are holding them up over their heads and a smile and pure joy on their face. And then being able to share that and make them somebody for the whole week after. Getting phone calls from writers, getting your name in the press, getting what you did, like you're fishing the NWT or something. You're somebody. And that's what I always wanted to do. That's what I always wanted to see. I always wanted to be that guy. I did win 9 tournaments in my career. So I wasn't really a slouch, but there wasn't nothing that followed.
Do you get the same?
When I won the FLW, they called it. That was it.
Do you get the same rush and joy out of handing them trophies over as you did to winning?
Yeah, I think I do. I really and truly think I do.
It seems like, I think I fished with you for a couple of years now. It seems like you're having a blast from the rules meeting to the very last bell. It seems like you're having the best time of your life.
Great. That's exactly what I want you guys to think and know, because I am. And if I wasn't, I'd go find a new job and let somebody else do it for you. But no, I absolutely love what I do. I love to plan the events. I love to make sure everything's right as much as we can. And I know some of you guys are out there thinking, yeah, I couldn't plan the weather though, could you? No, I can't. No. There's only one man that can do that, and it ain't not me.
Right.
But yeah, they can disrupt your best laid plans. But outside of that, we tried to do everything exactly right for you guys.
When it comes to weather, is there much, what's your standards for sending people? I know most places, you know, the weather doesn't too bad. I guess you'd be the big lakes like Green Bay and things like that where it gets an issue. Is there a standard you guys have? Or is it just kind of seeing? Because in the AIM, what I like about the AIM is you don't have to have a 25-foot boat. There's guys with 17-foot boats that have done very well, or smaller boats.
Absolutely.
So is there a different kind of way you look at things when you're in those bigger bodies of water for weather?
Well, and this is bad to say for the 17-foot guy, but he's not on my radar when I'm calling for bad weather. I'm sorry, but the 21-foot sleds that are out there, that's what we're based on. But like on Green Bay, for instance, we canceled the second day of the championship last year. Heartbreaking, didn't want to do it. But nobody had arrangements to stay Saturday night. Everybody was going home anyway, so trying to fish on Sunday was impossible. When you have a place where you have the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard can tell you that there's a small craft advisory, they mean it. They really and truly mean it.
Yeah. We got some big rigs out there, but they're all still considered small craft.
They're small craft advisory. And when I know guys are taking off running 40 miles, and in that particular tournament, guys, we had already had 17 or 18 guys turn their stuff, and they didn't care what I was going to do. They weren't going out. They were done. And, you know, they weren't close to the points, and there was zero reason for them to go out there and break their stuff in half just to fight it out for the last few spots.
So on new news, you guys a couple of years ago bought Walleye Angler Trail down in Iowa, right?
Yeah, out of Iowa.
So what was the decision to go and grab those guys and make it a name series?
Well, remember AIM is Anglers Insight Marketing. And we're a nationwide based company, as well as most of our sponsors are as well. It's all about leaving a footprint. Okay. We need to leave a footprint, and we're in North Dakota and Minnesota and Wisconsin. We're touching a lot of lives, but there's a lot of Illinois and Iowa guys down there, Southern Minnesota, Southern corner of Wisconsin, and that fish the Mississippi River, and they love to. And the Watt, as they called it, was up for sale, and it was an affordable piece to be able to plug into our program and help expand the footprint for our sponsor.
How did the first couple years go for you, or first year go for you?
The first year last year was okay. It's about what we expected. Our tournament director down there, he stayed with us for a year, and him and his wife had done a great job down there, but they're going to be done this year. And Denny will be driving down there, and he'll be running all the tournaments. So Denny's basically, between Denny and his son, Ben, Wisconsin, you'll get the chance to have Ben 2 times this year. But every other tournament, I will be there, and I'll be running. So we'll be running all 21 tournaments.
You could drive it nonstop. Is there any weekends left for you?
No, 2, I think.
Is there anything to go next, or how about a Great Lakes series?
Well, you know, if you look back on AIM in 2015, we went to the Great Lakes. Now, I thought I'd be going home and the world would be good, and they have a great tournament circuit over there called the Michigan Walleye Tour. But the Michigan Walleye Tour had been falling on hard times, and they just weren't as good as they were. So that's when we decided, well, maybe we should go back over there. Well, we rejuvenated them real well. They're doing real good right now. They said, hey, these guys are going to take our Thunder and our Anglers. So they came back on real hard, and we backed out after 1 year. And there's, if any of you guys have been to Lake Erie or Saginaw Bay, there ain't no such thing as throwing fish back over there. Catch, record, and release is not something them guys could care less about doing. That's where you go to stack up the logs of the lake. And every guy's laughing right now because they know it. You go there, you catch your 6 fish a day, and if you got a little one, you throw it back and get a bigger one. So CRR didn't really catch on over there in that 1 year. So we abandoned the Great Lakes. The board of directors and myself have been kicking around lots of different ideas. Nothing that I can talk about right now. But nothing that we have even set in stone about doing, but just hitting. We're ready. Something's ready. Yeah. Now, expand the weekend series. That was talked about. Expand into other series. That was talked about. So I'm sure as time goes along, you guys will hear about more and more.
So let's touch on, you sent a survey out, which I thought was crazy that somebody would send a survey out, because you know, you never know which gives surveys. And then you post the results this morning, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you guys should know, if you make the vote, you ought to know how it came out, huh?
Right, for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, we get a lot of questions throughout the year. Hey, why don't you just let us use our cell phones? Them guys are using them anyways. Well, hey, dude, if they're using them, tell me who's using them, when they did it, so I can bust them. Well, I never get that information. Yeah. They never see it. So we wanted to ask how many guys wanted to use his phone out on the water. And it's straight across the board, 75 to 80% want nothing to do with it. So that's what we'll be doing. We'll be sticking to that.
What's new for anything new for this year coming up?
Well, there is a couple new things, but the one that I want to share today with our listeners, Matt, is we're making you somebody. I've added a media coordinator this year. His name's Jeff. Jeff has been working with me since the first year of the national championship. He's the guy that built that great show for the national championship that goes on, where the fish pictures come up, the results come up, the picture of you on stage. He built that whole thing. Him and I dreamed, and over the years, that's where we came up with that. So we brought Jeff on as a part-time position to be our media coordinator, and that's why you're starting to see the surveys, the survey results, stuff I didn't have time for. Gotcha. You're going to see new newsletters coming on. But getting back to where I always wanted to do with this thing was to make you the angler somebody. You can do it yourself on Facebook. That's great. You can build your own world, or you can use mine. You can use my 35,000 followers. You can get your press time out there. Every single angler that fishes with AIM right now, I want you to make a note of this. Go to our page and follow it. AIM Pro Walleye Series, and follow our page. If you're not following it, we can't tag you. We're going to be tagging you a lot more, so you'll get shared out into yours. So we can help bring that to you. That's what media coordinator is going to be doing. We've also redid our website. We made some changes, and we built a gallery tab that's going to be at the top. So when we post the results, our tab will say gallery pictures and videos. You won't have to go looking through Facebook to find it. You'll be able to click on that and find you and your smiling face taking off, or your disgruntled face coming back, whatever happened to be the case. But here's the neat one for you, Matt. Everybody's got a pro page out there. Everybody's got their own personal page. And, you know, Aunt Doris's wedding or funeral or whatever's on there. And it's really not your fishing page. But, you know, you want to find sponsors and you want to look professional. We built into our website that we're just getting ready to release to you guys, that this is the first time anybody's hearing it. We built in pro pages.
Oh, nice.
With your membership, you're going to be able to fill out a whole bunch of stuff, make it go public or not. You can put an X in the boxes that you want people to know what kind of boat you have. You can attach your sponsors to the bottom. You can drag and drop pictures from the galleries of the events into that page. You're going to be able to copy and paste URLs into there for your sponsors. You're going to be able to list your tournament wins. You're going to be able to put pictures of you, a nice picture, you know, smiling in your fishing shirt at the top. And then you're going to be able to direct your sponsors to that page. On the front page of our website, there'll be a drop-down menu. And any angler that has taken the time to fill it all out and click the button that says, yeah, I want it to go public, their names will be in that drop-down menu. And you can say, oh, click Matt Snell right there. Oh, look at that. Matt, he's won a couple tournaments. He fishes with so-and-so. Look at the pictures of Matt at the bottom. And you're going to be able to show off on there. Now, with us being able to tag you in pictures, then you're going to be able to share that through with yours. Over the next year, we're hopefully going to teach everybody how to utilize what we've built for you with your page and get the social media just rolling for you. Whereas I don't know that there's anything else out there that can help.
That is awesome. You've been doing a lot behind the scenes.
Well, everybody asks me what I do all winter. Heavy lifting. Well, I just don't lay around and watch football or go ice fishing. There's some very heavy lifting that goes on. You know, we got to plan 21 tournaments. Mm-hmm. We got to get all of our permits. We got to get all of our local permits. We got to get all of our housing. We got to get everything. And that just takes forever. Right. Then we got to do all this with the website. We got to get all this in place. As a friend of mine who is the head of a school district says, Denny, do you think 1,000 kids just show up in September without proper prior planning? So I always say, do you know 1,000 of my kids don't show up to fish in April without proper prior planning?
True. Very, very true. So where do you want to see AIM in 10 years?
Top of the heap. I'm a driver. I'll never just sit back. Mm-hmm. It's just not in me. I like to win. So winning means we're going to, whatever the board decides we're going to do with expansions, take that to the next level. And if they decide on another one after it, take that to the next level. And hopefully I'm going to teach the next generation Denny Fox. And he's going to be able to take very good care of everybody. And we're going to roll this thing playing way after I'm dead.
I love it. Hey, one other question for you. What if you could direct any tournament or any event? Obviously, your event guys, what you really are in the grand scheme of things. What event would you want to take over and direct for a year? Anything, fishing, anything, sporting events. What's one thing you'd want to be at the helm at for a year?
That's an interesting question because, you know, you hate to say it this way, but whoever's got the most money, you know, come on. The world's driven by money, Matt. I love what I do, and I love who I do it for. And thinking of something that I would want to run because it would be cool to run, I don't know if I have anything that's cooler than what we run now. I really don't. A little bit more planning means I have to have a little bit more people, which means I have to have better direction, which usually goes sideways. As one of our coworkers had said, Denny, you're nothing more than a fancy wedding planner, but you're better at it because you got way more stuff to think about than they.
Right. Wow.
No, I don't want to plan weddings.
You sure?
No, man. No, I guarantee you it's not in my future. But, you know, registration's open right now. We opened up the season ticket sales. And they're going along real well right now. And they'll a season ticket can be bought until the very first tournament in any one division. And in that particular division is full. Then season ticket sales are done because obviously it's full. If we filled the field of 100 boats during season ticket sales, there would be no individual sales. But that's certainly not been the case, but a lot of guys don't want to deal with it during the season. One time buy, they can spend their money right now getting all the side pots and be done. Individual tournament sales, especially for the hot ones like Fox River and Lake Mille Lacs and Leech. They're Winneconne. They're the first ones to fill. They go on sale at 8 a.m. February 1st. Next then there will be a foot race.
Yeah. Have you guys thought about expanding entries into more boats?
The problem that we have DNR thing? Is, no, it's not. They don't really seem to care. Your venues become harder to get. Okay, so now you got to deal with how many more boats that you got. The other problem that you've got is just adding 25 boats means I have to have another person around. There's that many more boats to deal with. There's that many more problems to deal with, chips and cameras, and maybe we'll get to that too here. but there's things to do. And the second we expand it, the second you have more. And you guys know that we pay back 85% of cash in them entry fees back to you guys. And that's a big cash. You know, and that talking bringing in the price of plaques or anything else into what we're paying back. That's all on us. We pay that out of our pocket. And if I got to pay somebody else to be there to do more work, it takes money out of what we've got on the backside to spend to run that event. So as I've run some bigger tournaments, we found 100's really the number, Matt.
That sounds fair. Is there anything else you want to add on the upcoming season?
Well, I'm very excited for it. I think we got a great schedule in all of our divisions. It's going to be very competitive because of the way that we did set them up. Different time framings, different. Fortunately, here in Wisconsin, we just don't have that much to go to. But by mixing it up just a little bit, we got different ideas that we've been posing to the anglers for next year as well. And that seemed to go over pretty good. So in Wisconsin here, we've got a good schedule. Minnesota, we really stumped them up and put them on a couple of rivers on top of their two big lakes. North Dakota, they wanted it. We got it. We're going to make them go to Devil's Lake for the championship in September. Nice. The river division, we moved them a little bit farther north, and we're going to bring in some more Wisconsin and Minnesota anglers that are going to fish it. And so I'm pretty excited for a pretty hot year coming.
There you go. I'm going to get you out of here one last question. If you could only go fishing one more time, one last time, who you taking and where you going and what you fishing for?
I'd have to fish with my son. I'd like to sit next to him in the boat when we're river fishing, jigging for walleyes, and just catch fish all day long.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on. I hope you have a great year this year. And anybody that's out there, get onto the AIM page, get signed up, and go fish an event with Denny. It is a blast. Everybody's great out there. CRR is very easy to learn. Until next time, remember, there's only two things you can do to make somebody smile every day. One is give them a smile, and two, take them fishing. Thanks a lot.